Okay, well, it's 6:31 with my phone, so start the meeting. I think Andrew's gone. Seems to be the same as always. Okay, hopefully everyone can hear me. So, Andrew, you're just going to make an announcement regarding Zoom.
Thank you, Chairman. We've got Councillor Killoran, Councillor Peters and Naomi Perry joining us via Zoom, and also by COBUS, and hopefully will be with us at some point.
There it is. Okay, good. Okay. So we'll start with item one then, to receive apologies.
Thank you, Chairman. We've received apologies from Councillor Shrive and Councillor Louise Walker.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Councillor Legg as well. Hello. Sorry, Chairman.
Thank you. Item two, declarations of interest. We've all seen the agenda. Anybody got any declarations of interest? No? Thank you. Item number three, urgent business. I'm going to
there is any urgent business.
Thank you. Okay, item number four, to approve the public minutes held on the 15th of December. Again, you've all seen the minutes. So can I have a... I'll actually propose, can we have a second, please? Councillor McGarry, should we show of hands, please? Thank you. That's for and those against. And abstentions. Councillor, thank you. Yeah, that's four. Okay. Item number five, we've got Councillor Peters on Zoom. It is the EDR 366/21, beat the cold. Now, this was a question that we had from Councillor Walker. So, Councillor Walker, would you like to start on this? Because it was your question that actually brought this forward in the first place.
To buy on question is.
Yeah, you're on your own, well, they're not working,
I don't. Yeah, I don't think they're working.
Okay. Sorry for.
Again, you can stand here if you want to see where Bernard is.
I think the question came around from the original EDR where it referred to meet the cold, where there was that much increased demand that, if I remember right now, this is probably 3 months ago, there was that much increased demand that they could only give their services to the authorities that were actually paid into them. So I think the first query was around, why wasn't East Staffordshire paying in the first place? The second one, if I remember right, was around the £4,000 cap on the telephone advice line that was being proposed to be set up. What happened once that £4,000, if the demand was that great? Was that it? Was that the ceiling? Did it finish? I can't think.
I think that
was the answer that came back then was, yeah. was around the 30 households, I think, where they were proposing to send people to go and get advice up to about 30 households. But we're in the crisis, the energy crisis at the minute. So again, if that ceiling's met, what happens? Is that it? 30 hours done, or is the money there to increase it? I think that was pretty much on my side.
Yeah, I think, as you said, it says based on previous data, it's likely that up to 30 home visits will be required. That's literally what he says. Yeah. So, Councillor Peters, can you hear me?
I'm unmuted now. Yes, Chair. Thank you. I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay. So, did you hear what Councillor Walker just said?
Yes. I think it reflected the original question that was presented to me by Democratic Services. And that's the question I'll be answering tonight. So I do hope that it'll address the points that Councillor Walker has identified to you. I'd like to thank the committee for the question by Councillor Walker, and I'm more than happy to share with you this position that we're in at the moment. And hopefully, I will use some generic phrases here because it's a catch-all wherever we can. So if I may start by saying we have a service level agreement with the Beat the Cold organisation to provide the telephone advice service for a full year. It is not dependent upon demand. The cost is regardless of the amount of people we have using it. If the demand is high, resulting in calls not being answered, there is an answer machine, and those calls are responded to as quickly as possible. And there is no limit to the amount of people that can access the telephone advice service. We have budgeted for 10 home visits to be made between November and the end of March. Now, to date, we have had no home visits necessary because the inquiries have been by the telephone. For 2022 and 2023, we have requested funding for 30 home visits. Now, what's dictated that figure is the influence of the MTFS and the available finance. Now, if we find ourselves short of money, we'll have to think of a way to get round it. But I would emphasise to you that the MTFS dictates the financial approach we have to every project. So the 30 homes are linked to the available finance in the MTFS. And as colleagues will know, the MTFS is not yet finally approved. Now, we base those figures on previous evidence provided by the Beat the Cold charity as a maximum amount of home visits that have been required in East Staffordshire historically. And please note that home visits are only required when the customer cannot be assisted by the telephone advice service. To date, we have had 238 inquiries and no requests for home visits. That is as per the data at the end of the last quarter. Beat the Cold, of course, is a charity and is incorporated into the services that are aligned to East Staffordshire Borough Council. So funding, of course, from a charitable organisation can be vulnerable based on demand, but I'd like to assure the committee that we are geared to step up if we look to be being overwhelmed with home visits. Could I make the point quite clearly that the majority of contact to date and the services that we have provided to satisfied clients has been via the telephone? And I think that's reflected in the fact that we haven't had the need for any home visits. So I'm not going to say we're sitting comfortably at the moment, because who knows what next week, if the weather turns, if more bills start arriving on people's doorsteps, we could be faced with a surge. But we are gearing up. I want to assure the committee again that the officer team are working extremely hard to ensure that we care for the most vulnerable in our district. So the question around the EDR, I wasn't really sure what that meant. I can give you the definition of the EDR, which allows me as a member of the executive, i.e. a cabinet member, to sign off with delegated authority and to approve the scope of any work that is outside of our normal day-to-day business. And that was the purpose of that EDR. And I'm grateful that it sparked colleagues to ask the question, because we're never sure how many people take note of the EDRs. So I don't know whether there's any more I can add to what I've said. There's reams of paperwork on the topic. There's plenty of information on the web page for those that feel they need a bit more information. But of course, I'm more than happy to answer any further questions. And I've spoken to the organisation Beat the Cold and said that we may like to invite you to a scrutiny meeting with your agreement chair, should the committee feel they need to drill in any further on specific detail. And the last question relates to a point I think that was touched on. Could we share what Tamworth and Lichfield are doing in this context? Now, that caught me on the back foot. I don't know why we'd want to compare with Lichfield and Tamworth. There's no benchmarking involved with this exercise. But if you go to the web page, you'll see that Stoke and Staffordshire have identified all of the districts in Staffordshire as part of the Beat the Cold campaign. So operationally, it's the same process. But of course, the clients may be different. But I can't speak on behalf of those authorities. Happy to take any more questions, Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you to Councillor Peters as well for that. I'm not sure where the literally Tamworth comment may have been from. I think other questions, it certainly wasn't from me. One, I would still be interested, and I accept the point that it's for the year, but with the price rises coming again in spring, the caps go up, what happens, because it does specifically talk about the £4,000 cap, and there was still no sort of explanation why we wasn't paid into Beat the Cold, why they thought in the original EDR, it was talking about that they felt they had to withdraw because demand was that much they couldn't commit to authorities that weren't paying in, and East Staffordshire was one of those. I think it'd be a good idea if they come in, and also I think it'd be a good idea if we keep an eye on this situation, especially with energy crisis on the rise.
I think Councillor Peters did say that.
Yes, he did like say that.
Councillor Peters, can I ask you a question? Do you think the home visits have been curtailed by COVID? Because of, you know, I know you said that not many home visits have taken place, if any. But do you think because of COVID, it might be the fact that, people aren't, they don't want different folks in the house and so on?
Well, COVID circumstances play high on the agenda, of course, but... I'm not aware that COVID has prevented any of our officer teams going out, but responsible community members may have taken that decision off their own bat. I just don't know. It's a point worth noting. But I mean, we're in back to Plan A now, so hopefully those circumstances won't apply going forward. But just to reassure you again, a very, very vigilant approach to all of this, because... You know, there's a lot of vulnerable people out there at the moment, and Councillor Walker's right to point out as we get close to the end of the financial year, but it's probably going to be next week or the week after, when people start getting bills through the door, the demand could be quite significant on their own resources, and we need to be vigilant and ready to step up and help the vulnerable people.
Thank you, Councillor Peters. Does anyone else want to... Councillor Clark?
Thank you, Chair. So, question for Councillor Peters then, so go back to the original EDR. And I think some of the confusion comes because the text in the reasoning of the original document looks like it's been duplicated twice with half of it cut off. But it does mention in there that Beat the Cold has provided services within East Staffordshire via a charitable fund. However, this has run out and therefore the service that has been provided using their own resources. Be the Coal has seen unprecedented levels of demand for its service and have no choice but to focus all its efforts and resources in the districts and boroughs that fund their work. As such, they are no longer able to provide a service to the residents in East Staffordshire. So based on that and based on Councillor Peter's original question, he doesn't believe there's any change in the services and that despite what the EDR summary says, because of the result of the actions taken here, there won't actually be a change in that level of service that residents would see or be able to have access to. Councillor Peters?
I'm not aware of any deterioration in service or support to the community. It may be stretched at times. And all of the money, as I said to you earlier, it's all charity-based. So the Beat the Cold organisation is a charity and relies on grants. And most of those grants at the moment are coming from central government. Now, we also, as a local authority, have an access to that pathway. And the head of service is insisting that his team pursue that track because we can't afford, and I'm repeating myself now, we can't afford to let anyone down should they need, as a result of a home visit, improvements to their property. So we've got a very focused approach on the grant application process and anything else that's coming out of central government to support the funding aspects of this work.
Councillor Clark, do you want to... No, just thank Councillor Peters for the answer. I think it would be useful to have Beat the Cold come in at some point for questioning to the council.
I think we will do that. I think Andrea, if you can make a note of that, we can ask them to come. Anybody else? Councillor Gardner?
Yeah, just to clarify a couple of points, I think. Councillor Clark would have read on the original EDR, just to clarify for Councillor Peters. You'll see the EDR that he signed actually references Lichfield and Tamworth. They're referenced in the EDR that he signed. It's a service is no longer provided in East Staffs, but it's continued to be provided in Tamworth and Lichfield. That's where the reference to Tamworth and Lichfield come. Councillor Peters made a comment when he was answering Councillor Walker, I think, where he suggested that the NTFS will determine funding that's provided to this from East Staffs, and we haven't agreed the NTFS yet, but we're going to provide a service to 30 home visits, and that will be the NTFS. Can you just identify the cost of those 30 home visits, Councillor Peters, please?
No, I can't do that at the moment. I haven't got that information, but I'm more than happy to write to you after the meeting.
Yeah, well, I'm a bit surprised considering you've signed an EDR on that basis that you don't know the cost, but I'm more than happy to accept your written answer after the meeting.
Thank you.
Councillor Peters, can you also, I think Councillor Clark, I think given Councillor Clark's question, I think it would be good to put him on the email as well, and myself, please.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jeff. I trust that information would then be shared.
It should be shared. Actually, if you can do this, Councillor Peters, can you send it to Andrea, and then Andrea can share it with the rest of the group, and I think that's a good point.
Well, before your intervention, Chair, I was going to say I'd much prefer to make sure that we get the message to all members of the committee, that I send it to Democratic Services. So are you in agreement with that?
Yeah, is that okay, Councillor Grosvenor?
Because you absolutely, I think I'll ask a question for everybody. Everybody should have the answer.
Yep. Yes, Councillor Peters. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Before Councillor Peters closes, is there anyone else who wants to ask a question of him regarding the email?
Do we need to amend the wording of this EDR? Because it's obviously irregularities there, because Councillor Clark has said that one bit's been cut and pasted twice, so I feel that it needs to be reworded, please.
Councillor Peters?
I'll take advice after the meeting, if that's okay, and I'll come back to you on that topic as well.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? While we're here. Okay, thank you, Councillor Peters. And if you can supply that, the emails and so on to Andrea, Democratic Services, we would appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, item number 6 on the agenda, housing development and access to GPs. On Zoom, we have Naomi Perry, planning manager, and also we've got Councillor Allen here, deputy leader for planning is in portfolio, let's just say that. So, Councillor Allen.
Thanks, Chair. So I think the question, there was a specific question. It came after a briefing that the committee received from CCG, I think, a few weeks before, a general question around access to GP services in the borough. I think the specific question came from Councillor Walker around what do planning consider when new applications are permitted. So we all know that there's been thousands of houses built, certainly since 2015, and I think it's an important question to ask. I think it was this committee, it might have been the other committee, to answer the same kind of question, but happy to go last year, happy to go through it again this year. So Naomi's got a presentation that she's just going to let members know about. Essentially, there has been a change in the way that our Section 106 sums are asked for and commuted for the capital improvements to existing GP services. In recent years, previous to 2019, only three, I think, since 2019, since before 2019, only three applications in East Staffordshire, two of them being in East Oxeter and one in Burton, had any request from any developer to commute 106 funds to the use of frontline healthcare services, whether it's GPs or anything else. There's only three. Of all the applications that we had before 2019, there was only three. Since then, we've had a few more. One of the main reasons for that is CCGs, like lots of other public bodies, are statutory consultees. When that application is considered, they are asked, how does this application impact you and your service that you're delivering? And the CCGs, historically, never responded to that. One of the things that we started doing very early on in 2019 was actually chasing CCG for that comment. Even then, part of the time, they didn't respond. In about 2020, we started to communicate and have one-to-one conversations with the CCG themselves, trying to highlight what they're missing out on, really. They had this opportunity to bid for 106 monies as part of every application that went through, just like everybody else does. Everybody knows how efficient the County Council is at bidding for 106 funds for highways or education. Obviously, SBC does the same thing for various different things, open spaces being one of them. But the CCG didn't do that, never asked or explained to planners how that application, wherever it may be, impacted local services, and as a result of that, we need this money to help bolster the existing service. That wasn't happening, and they then realised and started to develop a policy around that. They got some external advice, they got an agent to draw up a policy, and now many applications now that go through they do bid for 106 funds. So there has been a historic problem. Going forward, though, as you'll find out from Naomi in a few seconds, very confident that at least in East Staffordshire we've got it covered. It kind of stems from the fact that the CCG aren't a planning authority and they don't understand what opportunity they have. Of course, County Council are very efficient at doing it because they understand how the process works. So does ESBC. It's also something that I'm trying to get parish councils to understand, because parish councils are also able to bid for 106 funds at the point at which applications are submitted, but it doesn't happen. So take that away to your parishes and feel free to get in touch. That's a separate thing to GP access, of course. So Naomi's got a presentation to run everybody through. I have to take questions after that, if that's okay. I forgot the question right as well in the first place, of course.
Yeah, I think we'll if Naomi puts the presentation.
Yep. Okay, thank you, Chair. It's only a few slides. Just a bit of a recap, really. Can everyone see that okay?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'm new to this. You know, we're presenting while everyone's sat in the room. So just a bit of a recap of the CCG presentation that I think was delivered last year, summer of last year. So the CCG themselves, so that's the Clinical Commissioning Group, they kind of recognised that there was a bit of a gap in the planning process, really. You know, they weren't as engaged as other statutory consultees. So they recognised that as planners, you know, we need to know who do we write to when we have a planning application, who do we consult. So, you know, we didn't even have a point of contact. The CCG, they needed to have their own policy on, you know, how they were going to ask for monies. You know, were they going to develop a formula? You know, what was the evidence base behind what they were asking for? And they also recognise that planners need to understand, you know, when the CCG asks for contribution, you know, where is it going to go? What's it going to be spent on? And why are they asking for it in the first place? So they started to, they've recognised this as a bit of an area that they needed to look at a couple of years ago, but they've been doing, as Councillor Allen touched on, quite a bit of work in this area. And I know that the question tonight really focused on GPs, but it was, I think it's important to note that the CCG kind of pulled together the responsibilities of lots of different health trusts, community healthcare trusts, hospitals, mental health care trusts, and individual primary care providers as well. So, a lot of those services are obviously delivered through GPs, but it's not just solely GPs that they're concerned with. So what the CCG have done, so they have been looking to recruit a dedicated person to look at this. Before, when we've consulted, it's been a bit, you know, like someone's kind of add-on to their day-to-day job. So they recognised they needed someone specifically to look at this area. They obviously have given a number of presentations to members, and so you may have seen something from the CCG. And I, being a planner, I kind of go to Staffordshire planning group meetings as well, so they've delivered in that forum as well, which has been very useful. We now have a single point of contact that we can go to and developers can go to as well if they want any pre-application advice. They're very keen to develop and maintain strong relationships with local planning authority, and they'll be pulling together, they'll be doing a consultation response on behalf of all of those organisations I listed earlier. They'll be making representation to us in terms of developer contributions, and the important part of that is they're developing an evidence base, so they'll have a good understanding of what healthcare provision is going on in a district in Staffordshire overall, where there is capacity problems, where there's population increases that is going to, you know, cause pressure on those services. And all of this is supported by the head of primary and community estates. So there's buy-in from everyone in healthcare provision. And they'll be developing and maintaining estate and infrastructure strategies. So they won't just be asking, whilst they'll be asking for contributions for individual developments, you know, they will have a wider strategy as well. And they'll be coordinating with kind of their property asset team as well. I won't go into the detail of that because I don't know, but you know, they don't own all of the GP practices, for example, but they'll have a good idea of all of the ins and outs of all of those agreements and contracts and things. And they'll have a better understanding of the relationship between housing, population growth, and what impacts that has on healthcare provision. So that's a bit of an update on, a recap of what they recognise was missing and what they've been working on. So what's happened over the last year? So last week I had notification that there's now a planning and development lead now in post since January. So we've now got a dedicated person, and they're keen to come along to the Staffordshire group and kind of introduce themselves to all planners there. So that's good. So, and they'll be the contact for all planning application consultations. We normally consult them on what we call major applications. So that's anything of 10 houses or more. But they have also requested that they see the full planning list that you all see. So they can also, you know, if they pick any other application that doesn't fall within a major definition, you know, they'll see that and they can comment on it should they feel it's important to. They're still building up their evidence base. And I think the idea behind that is that they will have at some point a live kind of mapping source of evidence, which will show the location of each healthcare asset, kind of a description of its condition, whether it's got the potential to expand or not. You know, for example, some GPs, they might be full, but they, you know, there physically is no space for them to expand. So they're building up all of this picture of all of the healthcare assets across all of Staffordshire. And they'll also, as part of that kind of live source of evidence, they'll be looking at population increases, what's predicted in each of those areas over the next few years. And also, whilst this isn't something that kind of planning can really get involved with, but kind of workforce issues as well. If they know of any issues with the workforce in healthcare provision as well. So all that kind of leads into how they ask for a contribution. So I've just done the steps here that they go through when they ask for a contribution. So firstly, they'll kind of predict the likely population that will come out of a housing development. And then they'll turn that population increase into what they'll call a patient appointment. So that'll be treatment and consulting appointments as well. So your normal kind of typical appointments that you get at a GP. They'll look at where the development is and work out what GP practices are nearby, or, you know, healthcare centres, and, you know, what will be the impact of increased population to that practice. Can it cope with, you know, having more patients to see? And if it's at capacity, you know, is that GP practice planning on expanding over the next few years? You know, they'll have a wider understanding of the strategy of each of these practices. So they'll have that knowledge as well. And then, you know, if there's no plans to expand and it's not physically possible to expand, then they'll look at, you know, the next practice beyond, really. And then with all that information, they'll calculate the financial contribution. So as Councillor Allen said, we've got quite a few of these now. And on my next slide, I've just got an example. Sorry, you probably can't see this very clearly, but this is how they present it to us. So a bit of a, it goes through those steps. So, you know, on this example, there was predicted to be 160 additional patients. They turn that into like a space per appointment based on size, times that based on kind of predicted build costs, which they have, which that's based on their own understanding of how much these things do cost. So it's up to date kind of build estimates, and then they calculate that all together. So on that one, they worked out that, you know, they requested £26,000. So that's just a bit of a recap, really. That's where my presentation finishes, but I'll happily take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Naomi. Does anybody want to ask Naomi a question while I'm here? Sorry, Councillor Gray.
Not much a question, Naomi, but I think where it's come from, and you quite like, we had a presentation to the CCG last year. I remember I was in a Zoom meeting, and I think there was a new person that was leading the CCG at that point, said they weren't sure about further developments for GP practices. They didn't know where housing development was going to go. There was all sorts of a query about, oh, we don't know how to find out where the houses are going to be. And I pointed out to them, the RS Academy Consultancy, there is a local planning place. You can see there where the developments are going to be for the next few years. So engage with the council. So thank you for the presentation, Reid, this year, that it's some increase in that. Because I think the concern from this committee
stemmed from the GP access report that we looked at to say that was there an issue, or were they looking at GP access report through Councillor Clark, and we'd spoken about GP services at this committee a number of times. I think one of the concerns was, you know, our GP practice being built. And I think it stemmed from the fact that, you know, we had this meeting with them last year, we gave them the advice, we just wanted to know no progress update. So thanks very much for that.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Walker, he's appointed to you, so.
Again, thank you for the presentation, but it's more of a, it's not a question as such, but more of a bit of confusion going on, because the amount of building that's going on then in East Staffordshire, we should have no issues with the GP access, but yet we've got issues all over. Well, I know there's issues with GP access across the country, but the amount of developments that are going on up at the Eniston in Branston, and particularly the GP practices that are going to be affected and overlaid, and with all this money that should be floating about, there should be no issue whatsoever. So something's not going right somewhere, and I accept, Naomi, that's not your fault. But it's something that we perhaps need to get the CCG back in here again and ask the question, why aren't they taking the funding that's there?
Well, I will say, Councillor Walker, now we've got this, it might be easier, but I would prefer them here, actually. Yeah. But, you know, we know the rules that they're following.
Yes.
Councillor Clark?
Thank you for the presentation, Naomi. Could I ask that we get a copy of that shared with the subgroup looking for GP access as well? Because it's quite useful. I think it's really positive to see the steps being taken to improve the situation with the CCG. I think one of the questions that would come out of it, obviously not for the planning department at ESBC, but for the CCG, would be what happens retrospectively when those planned applications have been missed out of this, because the CCG had previously put in applications, and how do they and the organisation solve the problems of GP accesses in areas that have got new houses being built. I'd also suggest that we possibly hold off getting the CCG back to this committee, just with that subgroup running in tandem, because a lot of our information, I think, also will come from the CCG. I'm just conscious that we don't want two work streams potentially looking at the same topics, but I need that to
I mean, eventually we will get them in, though, because I'm just thinking, Naomi, I know this again is not your briefing, but we do need to see them. I know that you were, again, this is not your brief, and we'll ask Councillor Lara the same thing. We had one of the issues was, of course, the fact that, as Councillor Walker pointed out, we are having a lot of houses built in certainly in East Staffordshire, but around Burton in particular, I would suggest. And I think Councillor Killoran will vouch for the fact that we, you know, people having from Stretton, for instance, as we all. We're having to travel, but they still are having to travel to Branston. Now, obviously, that, you know, the issues are, there's Stretton is a big enough place to have a doctor's surgery and so on, as it did have. But all of a sudden, they, you know, is there a chance that might close? There's a lot of worry about that. And then going to, you know, them having to go to Branston, which they are doing right now. And I think that's why, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why this came. To this committee, you know, with lots of concern. And I also know it comes to a county level as well. But again, thank you very much. Does anyone, Councillor Grove?
Yeah, just to clarify on that, they have got the cash to build their surgeries, and they have got the access to get cash to build surgeries. What they will tell you, and their answer is, recruitment of GPs to staff up the surgeries they can build is the issue. And it's an issue for them, but it's an issue nationally, not just locally. And that is the problem for them. So when you look at GP access, and when you look at a report of GP access, you've got to accept the fact that some things we can't even want, some things, a lot of things we can't do about it, but recruitment of GPs, and it's not an answer for the moment, but the recruitment of GPs and people to staff the surgeries, it's the big problem for them, I'm afraid.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor. Councillor Eric, and then Councillor.
I think the from our point of view, thank you, Naomi, for your presentation, is from a councillor's point of view, it's the constituents that come to us moaning that they haven't got those spaces within GP surgeries, or they're having to wait days and days and days to get an appointment. So in terms of, say, Councillor Allen's mentioned that a few surgeries have come forward and got S106 money out of any development that's going on. Do you then go back, once they've formulated how much they want to take from that contribution, do you go back to see what evidence they've spent their money on? Is there anything that we can't go back to them and say, well, like, we've spent it on X, Y, and Z, or we've been able to do a recruitment, or just something that we can work on? Because obviously from our point of view, and especially with social media, that's rife. When we see the new developments, and you've talked to Whiteburn, has had a massive stream of houses being built, and one of the major things they'll always pick up on is, how's the GP surgery going to fulfil all these extra houses? So it'd be interesting to be able to, I don't know, throw a little bit back, if you like, if we knew what the evidence base was on the contribution that they were asking for.
I can answer that one, Chair, if you want.
Yes, please. Yes.
So when we have a Section 106, so that will clearly say in there where the money is to be spent. So it'll say, you know, expansion of Branston surgery, for example. And it will also have a time scale in there of when that money should be spent. I don't think any of the ones that we've had to date have actually reached the trigger where we've given them the money yet. But when we do get to that trigger point, you know, we will pass that money on. And then they will, you know, we would expect that they do tell us what they've spent it on, and they spend it on what they, you know, what they should be spending it on. And members will be aware that we now have to prepare an infrastructure funding statement to say how much money we collect from Section 106s and what it's been spent on. So I would expect, you know, that they would have to keep a record of that, you know, to help us fulfil that statement.
Thank you, Naomi. Councillor Beach.
I was actually asking exactly what Councillor McGarry asked, just in terms of how do we know where the money's been spent. Similarly to what Councillor Brogan was saying, obviously staffing, providing a building for a service, trying to get the building, can we staff it? Has it got money there to staff it? But beyond that, it goes way past anything we can contribute towards. If there aren't GPs to be employed, then there aren't GPs. The other question that came up about locations, I think it might be worth having the CCG in. Maybe after Adam's, Clark's review is completed, maybe to explain to us how that works, because I'm fairly sure there's similar to schools in that GP's catchment is, and you can't overlap catchment because there's an element of GP's that is a business. They're partners, aren't they? Practice partners. So there's elements of it that's a business, and there is some regulation within the CCB rules that says how close together you can set up pharmacies or set up GP surgeries, and what population they're covering. The overlap shouldn't be an issue, but they have to have those conversations with existing parties. So, in my understanding.
Councillor Eason.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to also echo our thanks to Naomi for the presentation as well. By the same token, Chair, might notice as well, you mentioned about social media and word of mouth as well. There is some kind of condemnations or some kind of NTGP or what's going on there. But in reality, we'd like to convey our gratitude to those health professionals, what they're doing, and they're in this difficult time. The whole point is that resources are limited, but they're trying their very best to stretch with this one. We must not forget. On a same note, can I just ask you, on your presentation, Amy, and the cabinet member mentioned about the Section 161 as well, will it be possible, which is really, really useful for us, is there an up-to-date figure on how much money is available in the Section 164 as a whole in that structure or council? If you can supply us with a figure, then possibly with officers' advice, we might know which way to go and which way to proceed. Chair, Thank you. Naomi, do you want to?
So I can send a link round via through Andrea afterwards, which will send you to the infrastructure funding statement. So that's kind of up to date what's been agreed through signed section 106s.
Thank you. And I've got Councillor Brady who would like to ask a question as well.
I was just regarding the 106 money, do we communicate, for example, Derbyshire and Staffordshire in that way when you're having large building right on the border? So, for example, I can use my area, Staple Hill. We've had a large housing build on Drake Lane, which advertises services in Staffordshire, our doctors and roads. Do we work then together with Derbyshire in accessing the 106 and sharing that? Can we share that money? How does that work in the bidding on that? So it's working in both areas. I don't know if I made myself so clear on that.
For large applications, say if, you know, that one at Drakelow that you referred to, we would be a consultee to that planning application. But as would, you know, I would expect the CCG would be a consultee. So they could equally reply to that planning application to say, you know, actually, whilst we're in Staffordshire, people are going to be accessing our healthcare centres. So, you know, we'd like a contribution. I would expect that would happen. But obviously, we're only a consultee as well. So, I suppose it's not, we don't have the evidence to say, you know, we want, you know, give the CCG X amount of pounds, because it's not really our remit to do that. It's useful that Mike's here actually, because we had an application in South Derbyshire a few years ago on Newton Road, if anyone knows it, just the other side of the boundary. So we were consulted, and Mike requested a contribution towards open spaces, which I believe Mike can correct me if I'm wrong, but that went towards the upgrade of the tennis courts on Newton Road. So you know, we do when we're consulted, we do kind of put a request in, but only for things, you know, that are relevant to us as an authority.
Yeah, I'll just chip in there. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. There was a development just across the border in South Derbyshire. We requested some money. That was able to come through as part of their development, and we were able to refurbish both the tennis and basketball courts at Newton Road and include some gym equipment and exercise equipment on there as well. So it really helped with the refurbish and modernisation of that particular park. So there is cross-border working, and that's a real life example of how it works well.
Thank you for that, Mike. Task clock, and then I'm going to go to Councillor Allen. If you don't mind, we'll come to you at the end, because people have a few questions, I'm sure, as well. So,
thank you. I do have a question, Naomi, and this is going to show my naivety in planning policy. But outside of the consultation of CCG, is healthcare capacity considered in planning applications? And are there any instances when planning applications could be rejected on the basis of a lack of capacity within the healthcare system?
It's considered by the fact that we would consult the CCG and, you know, kind of have a conversation with them through the planning application process. If they said, you know, if they had the evidence to say the capacity, you know, there was no solution through Section 106, or, you know, that would alleviate the problem, and it was so severe, you know, we could look at refusing an application. We haven't had any to date, but, you know, that doesn't mean that it's not possible. But the emphasis would really be on the CCG to kind of give us the evidence, really, to say, you know, why that application would be detrimental and have such a negative impact.
Thank you, Naomi. I think you've answered all the questions so far. Just thank you for your presentation, by the way. Excellent. So we're going to move to Councillor Allen, and I'm sure you'll be still on, so you know, if you need you, in that respect. Councillor Allen.
Thanks, Chair. So I guess the presentation and the way that it was structured is basically trying to get across the point that when applications are permitted and the impact is assessed on the whole community, it isn't just it's not just the local authority that has a part to play. All the statutory consultees also have a part to play, and whilst I can see it's easy to assume that as a result of an application that planners should consider the impact to things like GP services, but the same token, local authorities and planning authorities don't know how much money would be required to increase the capacity. They don't know where it would be required, if the existing supply or capacity is over capacity. And so it comes back to that point that the CCG needs to engage, and they have been engaging very, very recently. I'll just pick up on a couple of points, though, that have been mentioned about money sloshing around. And quite right, there has been thousands of houses been built, certainly since 2015. But I'll reiterate what I said at the start. There has only been three applications, one in Burton, that's the IMEX, and two in Etoxeter. And now, I'll speak as a Etoxeter member. There isn't a significant problem with access to GP services. The money I've got spreadsheet in front of me is about £160,000, which will go into an existing GP practice in Etoxeter. Why? Because the GP practice actually asked for it, not the CCG. So it isn't just CCGs request the monies, and if I can help at all with the scrutiny review that's ongoing, trying to get to the bottom of where the problems lie, I suggest that it would be useful to get the PCN, it's not participation boost, it's the primary care network along to speak to you as well about where they believe that there is a problem in the whole system. Section 106 is a one source of funding. CCGs are funded nationally as well. Don't ask me what I think about healthcare generally across the whole of the country. That's a completely separate matter. No, of course. But it goes away from the portfolio. But it is, you know, there is a big problem in access to GPs and making sure there's enough GPs to cover across the area. There's also Section 106 spreadsheet, which is the one I'm reading from at the moment, which I think the subgroup would be useful. It'd be useful to get that in front of people, in front of the group, and you'll be able to see for yourself that actually there isn't the thousands of pounds there, hundreds of thousands of pounds there should be, but there has, because the CCG haven't engaged, certainly GP practices haven't been able to understand it either. Only in certain circumstances have they requested the monies. The money isn't there at the moment, so we are left to the CCG to make their own investments. But that's a different model altogether, and I think the PCN would really help that whole conversation and help you understand it a little bit more.
Councillor B.
Just a side question for clarity. In regard to money available from 106s, surely the size of the development determines the amount of 106, so there isn't like an amount every year, it's not a budgeted amount, depending on how many houses built, depends on how much money turns up, and what we can just keep that infinitely for all the time until we choose to spend it, or we have to spend it within a certain time scale, or we have to spend it in a certain place. So, for example, houses in Etoxeter, 106 money gets spent in Etoxeter, houses in Burton, 106 money gets spent in Burton. Is that how I've got my head around it? Is that right?
Generally, it depends what kind of 106 that you're talking about. So everyone knows that affordable housing is a big one that ESVC regularly requests, and you build affordable housing on site or is commuted. Those tend to have timescales attached to them. Timescales attached to them. The reason that I wanted to in 2019, the reason that I picked up on CCG not requesting the funding was because every application that goes through is permitted at the planning committee, but it's always permitted subject to successful 106 negotiations, a And in that negotiation, the developer will sit down on an open book basis with the local planning authority and say, this is how much money, this is an accepted amount of money that we're going to make from the development itself. Planners will say, this is how much money is requested from the community. Okay, so if the ask is above the viability line, then we have to discuss, and planning committee have done it in not too many times, which is my problem. The planning committee have to discuss which 106s get the money in the first place. I'd like to get it to a stage where every application, especially the large scale applications, every application, the ask is up here and the viability is here, so that every application we have to decide where the money is going to be spent. And at the moment, there are far too many applications that are going through where the ask is way lower than the viability line. Don't even forget, if it's lower, that gap goes to the developer. So it's a bigger thing than just CCGs, but that's a general point about Section 106 requests in general.
Thank you, Councillor Allen. So you're telling me then, well, Councillor Beach, I think, was trying to point out, if a housing estate is being built in Uttoxeter, I, naively, possibly, I presumed it would have benefited the whole of East Staffordshire, as in anywhere in East Staffordshire, whether it be Burton, Uttoxeter or Tutbury, for instance. Is that the case, or is that not the case?
It depends what kind of 106 is requested for. So there was an application recently in my ward, in Toxa, and they couldn't provide any, well, if they were asked to provide on-site play equipment, it would make the scheme unviable. It was a scheme of affordable housing, so the waiting, you know, we need affordable housing, everybody knows we've got a massive shortage of affordable housing. It was decided that we're going to permit the scheme, but we're going to commute a certain amount of money, and I think Michael know about this. We're going to commute a certain amount of money to a local park. So, but it has to be within a certain radius of the park, quite close to it. Otherwise,
I understand that.
Can't justify. It really does depend on what kind of application, what kind of 106 is being requested in the first place.
Okay, Mike.
Yeah, I can give you it from an open spaces perspective, which will help to shed some light on it. So Section 106s can come in all different forms and shapes and sizes. The principle, the way the summit is generated is normally through the open spaces SPD, which does various calculations on where the park and open space is situated within the borough. That's also influenced by the amount of provision that a developer may provide on site. So they might provide everything on site, they might provide some off site. But in terms of the regulations that you will see written in a Section 106 agreement, it can be various. So it could be for a specific site. So the Newton Road is a really good example, because even though it was in South Derbyshire, Newton Road is literally down the road from the development in South Derbyshire. It had to be spent in Newton Road Park. It could not be spent anywhere else. And that was the stipulation within that. Councillor Allen has just talked about the one in Uttoxeter. Because the development is so close to it, it has to be within a certain parameter, a certain geographical location to be spent. There are others that can be vague. So we've got Section 106 agreements that will say for the improvement of public open space within Burton-on-Trent. So that's anywhere within the boundaries of Burton-on-Trent. There's others that will say Uttoxeter. It's really about what the developer and our planning colleagues agree in part of that Section 106. As part of that as well, both have their strengths and the weaknesses. So again, going back to Newton Road, being able to spend a large amount of cash on Newton Road has clearly benefited that park in Windsor. I don't think we've got any Windsor councillors with us today, but it really benefited that park. But you do find yourself, if you've got a large capital receipt going, what else can we spend it on? Admittedly, you've got 10 years normally as well, so you don't have to spend it all at once, but you've normally got about 10 years to spend on it. It can be less, but it's normally 10 years. Equally, if you've got a number of Section 106 agreements that have some latitude and can be spent in different locations, we can build them up into a pot for a significant project. We haven't done that yet, but you could do that. Or you can use that money to say, well, I need to improve this park within the remits of the descriptions, so we might do X, Y, and Z. So I could see, I know Councillor Clark's in the room. So the benches at Branston Water Park were funded by a Section 106 agreement. That's one of the examples. It wasn't specific for Branston Water Park, but it was improving open space within Branston. So we used that within Burton. So we used that to improve that particular open space. So they can be varied, they can be different, and they can be both a double-edged sword to our advantage and disadvantage. But it's about making sure that we use it in the right way for the communities. I could not use one for Uttoxeter in Burton and vice versa for Burton Uttoxeter. It wouldn't be justifiable. There's always those restrictions. They just vary from Section 106 to Section 106.
Thank you, Mike. We have also got Councillor Ackroyd here as well, by the way.
Sorry. Sorry, Councillor Ackroyd. I'm going to
put that out for you, or you might be in trouble later.
Sorry, I'm Councillor Grosvenor. Sorry.
Got Councillor Locke.
All the councillors in Branston, sorry.
Right, Mike, I'm not in the same group.
I apologise, Councillor Grosvenor as well.
Is it me?
Yes, it is.
Sorry. I think, like yourself, I thought I understood how it worked until people tried to explain it to me just now. So I'm going to ask a really blunt question now, so I am a bit puzzled. So ultimately, who decides the radius of spending on a 106? Is it the planning committee or is it the developer? Because I don't like this, it's a negotiation. I want to know who actually gets to make the decision.
Shall I jump in there?
Okay.
So, I mean, we could have a separate evening just on Section 106s, but the planning legislation, the law, tells us that Section 106s, have to meet, there's five tests that they have to meet. So they have to be reasonable, proportionate, necessary. Test myself now, I can't think of the other two. But unfortunately, it is all negotiation. In Councillor Allen gave an example of affordable housing. There is an affordable housing need across the borough, so it's in that case, it's fine really against those tests of planning that we say affordable housing, off-site affordable housing sums are spent within the borough because we have got a wider need for affordable housing. But the example that Mike gave, when that Section 106 was negotiated, there was probably going to be a large increase of population living in Branston, and based on the standards that we use in terms of access to open space, it was probably felt actually there needs to be more open space in Branston, or an improvement to what's there to meet this new population. So that's probably why that Section 106 was a bit vaguer in terms of where that money should be spent. Maybe there wasn't one particular part where that money should be targeted towards. So it really depends on who the consultee is on each application and what the pressures are. Mike might be consulted on one right next to a park that he's actually got on his list of that, one day, if he's got enough money, he'd like to improve it. So that's a perfect opportunity there. There's a direct link between the development. People who live in that new development are likely to go to that park. So, that probably is a no-brainer for him. He's like, yeah, I'll have all of the contribution to go to that park. Where it's not so clear-cut for everything, really. Education, they are quite clear-cut. They'll say from that development, they've got this calculation. They can say, we're going to have 100 extra pupils, within their standards of how far people should travel to school. They'll say, they're going to go to that school there. We know we need to have a new classroom, so we're going to ask for X amount of pounds, and by such and such a date, we'll deliver a new classroom there, just in time for when all these new pupils will be going there. So it really depends on what the infrastructure is, what's the current situation, and also taking into account when the development will be built. Really, some large ones might take quite a while to be built. You might factor in a few kind of smaller projects that will be built alongside that development.
you, Naomi. Councillor Barker, is it for your, is your question for George or Naomi, or both? Actually, probably both.
It's probably a matter of clarity, really.
Councillor Allen, should I say.
Yeah. As a member of the planning committee and have been on there all the time, just so you know, by the time it gets to us, the negotiations have taken place between the developer and our planning officers, and the decision is virtually made. The only time we get a say in the matter is if they can't, as Councillor Allen said, if it's not viable, then it comes to us to say which bits of it get paid and which we will forego, effectively.
So,
to clear that up for everybody, because it's, you know, it seems that people are, you know, nobody's really sure how these things work, but that's it from a councillor's point of view, anyway, from a member of the planning committee.
So actually, we the officers have really, they're the ones that are dealing with it before it even comes to the councils.
Yeah, they're the experts in negotiations. No way we can negotiate as a committee for the developer. So we have to rely on our officers to do that. And I say if there's any problem, then that's when we get involved. Is that right, Naomi? Am I?
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Hussain.
Thank you, Chair. And I must admit that it's really encouraging to see a cabinet member in the scrutiny, and we want very often their presence as well. It will give us some thoughts to ask you the questions as well. And this is our job to scrutinize and ask you to put your feet on the fire, if I may. You mentioned about the affordable housing. We mentioned about the affordable housing. There are so many definitions or something. Could you please help us by what do you mean by affordable housing? And subsequently, is there any document you are aware of that shows that as an authority, ESBC has failed about 170 affordable houses in this world? Is there any document you are aware of? What is our current situation in terms of building or in terms of getting this affordable housing target, please? Thank you.
Do you want me to answer that one, Chair?
If Councillor Allen,
I'm happy to
want to comment, by all means.
Okay. Pick some of that up. Just to clarify, Naomi, you were right. I've only had the benefit of Googling while we've been talking, but you were right about it's 3 points, not five, for the section 106. The 100 gone to. Affordable housing targets. There isn't a target as such in the local plan. I think there should be, and perhaps post during a review we might put something like that into it, but not. I think Naomi will be able to expand a little bit on that.
Oh yeah, so we do have a policy in the plan.
You did ask about what do I mean by affordable housing? Essentially, affordable housing, and the government doesn't give a definition for it really. It's kind of changed over time, over many years. It's basically housing that isn't just sold on the open market. So if it's a shared ownership, if it's a first home, which is 70% market value, if it's affordable housing, generally 80% market value. You can sort of talk about it in that way. If it's social housing, that's affordable housing. All of them things are affordable housing. So there isn't a strict definition of it, but I'm sure Naomi will be able to add to it.
Yeah, so there's a member briefing next week, actually, where we'll have just a bit of an update on first homes, which is a new kind of product. So sorry to those who have already heard about that. But Councillor Allen's right. The definition of affordable housing has been kind of increased over the last few years. You know, before it was basically affordable rent, social rent, or intermediate housing. So kind of where you could maybe buy half and then rent the other half from a registered social landlord. But we've really seen that change over the last few years, and the government have really been pushing affordable home ownership. So we've seen starter homes and the new kind of starter homes, first homes, included in that definition as well. So it really is quite broad. But Councillor Allen was right. Really, it can be lots of products that aren't basically housing on the market.
Naomi, can I just stop you there, look, guys? You know, Naomi's talking, and I can hear you from here. So just bear that in mind. Carry on,
Yeah, so so Councillor Allen was right, really. It's pretty, it's kind of a lot of projects that aren't your usual market housing. And then in terms of the second question about delivery of affordable housing, the local plan does have a target, which is 112 houses a year on average over the whole plan period, which is 2012 to 2031. And then in our annual monitoring report, which was published in December, we obviously report how many affordable houses have been completed over each year. And we recognise that at the start of the plan period, the figure would probably be quite low because, you know, the sites hadn't been started, the Section 106s hadn't been completely, gathered at that time. But we are seeing an increase pretty much year on year. I think that, it's not quite been like that. But overall, we're seeing an increase. So we have met the target over the last couple of years, I believe. But overall, we're not through the plan period yet, and we've got a lot of more sites to come on board.
Councillor Allen,
I don't see that as an affordable housing target as such, because you can effectively wait until the final year of your plan and build all your affordable housing in one go. I don't think that's a sustainable way to or fair way to do it. So I would like to see a policy that ensures a certain amount of affordable housing or requires a certain amount of affordable housing built every year, so there's a steady release of housing, rather than going 30 years without any new affordable housing, hypothetically, not realistically, and then seeing a great big dollar when we could have done, people needed it. Right now, people need affordable housing. So,
thank you, Councillor Allen. And Councillor Walker, and then we're going to move on because...
Just quickly, because I'm conscious we've digressed somewhat. The overall question is about the 106
infrastructure,
how the infrastructure looks at. But I've been fascinated about the 106 allocations, because obviously that's come into question down the line, which I don't want to be the waters with that, but with the National Forest, because that, after this conversation, I just find that interesting. But yeah, just a quick point, there is a definite distinction in some quarters between social housing and affordable housing, and it'd be interesting to see what our targets are, if any, for social housing.
We're going to move on now. Is Naomi gone? Pass on our thanks to Naomi.
Okay.
Thank you, Councillor Allen, as well. Item number 7. So it's an update from Councillor Atkins.
Cool. Thank you, Chair. I've had a meeting since the last one, but there's one next Monday. I've sat listening with interest to your debate. The integrated care system update we're doing is a new interim chief executive designate. I urge you to go and have a look at the Better Together website. There's a press release coming out today on a consultation on the draft strategy, and read up on the integrated care system, because it would inform your debate far better about what care systems you may be having in the future and what the borough should be doing to help people in good health. That is the integrated care system. It's moved on from the transformation partnership, and it's, I suppose with COVID, our eyes have been up for what's been rolling along, still in the background, and there's a consultation out now for about another month, from the 21st, which is on February the 22nd. So you can go on as an individual as an organisation and make your comments. I've made my comments. I think you very, the thing with the NHS is you end up with confirmation bias because they talk to themselves too much. But none of you in the room have known about the consultation. But that's the other part of it. There's a COVID vaccination update. There's an item on integrated care hubs in and around Stoke-on-Trent in the north of the county. and that's more about how they're touching on the GP shortage and how hospitals and all the different bits that come together. There's also an update on care homes. The County Council is now back in the business of building care homes. Although, having said that, the amount of capacity is up and down. It, with COVID, it's actually dropped down. It's gone back up to about 83%. There's some district and borough health screening updates. I've read out in that report as a verbal report of the meeting, but that's just really an update of where we are at the moment. I think the important thing is the integrated care system, if you read up on it. Interestingly, for us in Staffordshire, Boundary, Derbyshire, Derby and Derbyshire and the South and Staffordshire integrated care system. And obviously, health is a board, isn't it? So it's tied in with Derby and Staffordshire, Stoke, and currently with Wolverhampton. So there's a lot of what the program is. The council is very much in that, and the things that we've been talking about are part and parcel of keeping people healthy. But I think the way that you can, if you read the papers, you can see that the way that health will be delivered is undergoing quite a fundamental change that's been going on for quite a while. And you know, you've just got to keep reading the paperwork, I'm afraid. So that's my report.
Thank you, Councillor. Does anybody want to ask Councillor Atkins any questions? I knew that we won. Councillor Hussain.
Can I just ask Councillor Atkins, is he aware that Burton and Uttoxeter has got the highest death rates across the United Kingdom regarding COVID?
All the details are on a website somewhere. I wouldn't have said we've got the highest test rates. What I would say is that there's been a very low vaccination take-up in parts of the borough. And you can put two and two together and make five. But I would recommend that people get vaccinated. We're moving into a different phase of the epidemic as it moves into a pandemic and becomes milder. And obviously we're going to have to reach a stage where we live with coronavirus so that life can go on. But the figures are there. They're on our database and we can get them up.
Thank you, Councillor Atkins.
Thank you, Councillor Atkins. It's interesting that you just said that you encourage people to get vaccinated. Obviously, the vaccination has rolled out to children. And interestingly, from a personal point of view, to more vulnerable children of a certain age, the booster vaccination is now available. Yet when you go on to book your vaccination, there are no appointments available, whether that's at Pirelli, Uttoxeter Racecourse. So are we extending our vaccination appointments? Is there going to be more available? Because clearly I have literally, in the last 5 minutes, gone on, and there is one available appointment.
Yeah.
And that's including my own GP surgery.
Yeah. There should be. There's a national thing that you log on to, and it's the NHS, so I'll just keep trying that. I had to deal with one where, locally, where they'd gone to a walk-in vaccination centre in Canada. There were loads of people outside with a big banner up, but there was nobody there shut. And they needed the vaccination so that they could travel, and they went to Walsall. So I'm not going to say it's easy. They're constantly put out where they are and how to make the vaccinations, and ultimately we encourage people to keep trying. So I don't know why there isn't a available. You can get them at chemists, pharmacies, GPs, walking vaccination centres, all those places.
Thank you.
I've just going to say it's actually getting very similar to Blue.
Did anyone go for a flu jab when the first pandemic first started? Mm-hmm. And you went to the back of the GP's in one door and you walked along the corridor and it was one person at a time down the corridor and the nurse stood in the doorway and you went with one sleeve in and one sleeve out and she stuck you in the arm and you left the door. With Councillor Allen still being here, and then perhaps got a bit of a relationship going with some of the local GPs practices, could that be a conversation that started regarding having a clinic day like they do for flu every year, several times a year? You know, we've been doing it at the community centre. Is it not something we can just start a conversation about locally, assuming the vaccines are ready?
Councillor Hudson.
Yeah, I think you'll find with flu that the doctor will notify the people that need to have it. There's different doses of flu for different age groups. So people who are over 65 have one type, people who are under 65 have another. If you're younger, it's a different injection that you have. But the people in your doctor, you don't need them clinically because our GP's pretty switched on and they'll let you know. They'll let me know every year. I go every year and have it. So you just have to be careful which day you go on because they can't mix the dosage up. But we've never had a problem in you talking to each other.
Councillor Ackroyd, did you have your hand up as well? Councillor Ackroyd, did you have your hand up? Or did you
I was just muttering to myself. So on this particular occasion, obviously there is a big difference between Toxeter and the GPs. Because we're really struggling in Burton, aren't we, the GPs? Yeah, yeah. But I have to say, as far as the flu is concerned, that has never been a problem. We've been regularly contacted by our GPs, so that's not a problem.
Good, Councillor. Councillor Walker.
Yeah, just a very quick question. Councillor Atkins says the figures are hidden away or stuck somewhere on the website and they're available. I've been asking for them for some time if you can let me know or we can find that. What are the figures for Burton, specifically in the Burton where it was hit very, very hard in the second wave? And we know why your tox has not got a problem because we now know that's where all the 106 money goes.
We wish, but we I'm not going to on that.
There'll be some talk that I picked up some talk that there will not be a need for continual doses of vaccinations that after the third vaccination. There has been some talk about that. I noticed in the COVID update that saying Ian and I will have had on the 14th of January, it does say how many deaths within 28 days. And it's a strange figure, actually. In East Staffordshire, there's 462. It's a very strange figure. So I'm sure that they must know. So you'd have to dive into that. But I don't think you'd be able to get down to a ward basis. It would be more a registrar's office. So you might be able to get it on a population basis, but there are figures available. For example, last 2 July, there were more people dying of pneumonia than the weather of COVID. So it's, there are other ways that people can pass away and that have been neglected in the way.
More questions for Councillor Ackroyd before we move on? Okay. All right, thank you, Councillor Atkins. Thank you very much. So we'll move on to item number 8, which is the scrutiny reviews, waste and recycling review, and the supporting and engaging communities review. Councillor Legg isn't with us today, so we'll start with the waste and recycling. We are going to have a vote on this eventually today. has anybody got any comments on that? And Mike, if you would like to take some of these questions as well, if you don't mind. Yes, Councillor Locke.
So, having looked through the reports from both of the scrutiny committees, it seems to me that the report from ours has a slightly...
When you say ours...
Our scrutiny.
You're on this one as well, so this...
I know, I apologise. The recommendation 8.4.2 on our scrutiny committee report seems a little bit anomalous to me. Brown garden waste bin collection is suspended in December and or January. I kind of understand that coming out of the audit and value for money scrutiny committee, but not so much ours. And when you read through the report, it doesn't seem to me that there is a great deal of evidence to support that recommendation. And just anecdotally, if you think through what people do in late December and January, they dump Christmas trees. I'm concerned that if we suspend the brown bins, we'll just increase the fly tipping, which we then have to deal with by resource anyway. It seems to me that all that recommendation is going to do is annoy the citizens and potentially cause us costs we haven't actually considered in the report.
I'm sure Mike will agree that we had the individual reviews and benchmarking. A lot of the councils that we looked at that had very high recycling levels actually did, they were suspending their waste in December and January. I think that's correct, isn't it, Mike, from what I can remember?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it's important to point out that it isn't Dan and my report, it's actually the subgroup's report, which we prepared in conjunction with them. We've merely wrote it, and the group have agreed it. What you've actually got in the report is a result of some of that research. So there are councils locally that do suspend their waste. We haven't come across, but we didn't actually ask the question whether they'd had any increase fly tipping of Christmas trees during that particular period. But there was evidence to suggest there was councils that suspend their bin waste, that brown green waste, and there's others that actually charge for it as well. So it is based on research, and it's a potential recommendation that we as a council might want to take forward.
Can I just also say they are recommendations, as a council, as a cabinet, and as officers as well, they would have to take that review and then, work on that basis. They're just recommendations in that respect. But they are evidence-based, as Mike has actually pointed out. So, anyone else?
That point was discussed at another forum, I'm sure, a few years ago, and they said that the savings was negligible. Suspending it in those 2 months, the costs, we didn't say that much. That's why we didn't get away with it then.
I think, though, we didn't look, we're not value for money or so that's hence the reason why we were looking at that. What else want to... Councillor?
I'll supplement the comments I made about the scrutiny committee in Bank of Ireland, which reviewed a similar report, which is the recommendation to undertake a review to charge for the collection of green waste. There's nothing in the report which justifies that, but one paragraph which suggests other councils may do it. And this basically is just giving carte blanche for the cabinet to introduce the brown bin charge, which of course was brought to the Conservative group around about 18 months ago, and the Conservative group voted against that. But clearly this scrutiny report now is just going to give carte blanche for the cabinet to bring it through again. So I'll be voting against on that basis.
That's fine, Councillor Gray. Can I just point out to you that, myself, Councillor Clark, Councillor Legg, and also Councillor Lamb were involved with the review. So it was cross-party in that respect. So, just pointing that out.
It's irrelevant to me whether it's cross-party or not. At the point it stands, it's going to give carte blanche to the Cabinet to introduce a brown bin charge. I didn't make any reference to it. It was on the group.
No, but I was just trying to make that point. thank you, Councillor. Anyone else? Councillor Clark.
So I just like to make the point of the committee that so both of those recommendations, I think it is important to note that they are a review into charging for garden waste and also suspending them. It's not suggesting the council goes ahead with them. I think a review rightly would look at both the positive and the negative aspects of bringing those in before a decision is made either way. I think in terms of the evidence base for in where those recommendations have come from. So one of the things that was kind of brought out in the data in that typically those authorities charging for garden waste were on the best performing end of the spectrum, as well as those who had suspended it were again on the higher performing end of the spectrum in terms of the benchmarking exercises. Now that's not to say that those two policies are the cause of those authorities being better performing, but I think it would be right to consider in a rounded way both the negative and the positive aspects of that, whether there are underlying aspects in there that would justify bringing those in or not. I also think it's also worth noting that this report doesn't suggest either of those two recommendations necessarily are a positive and should be brought in, just that based on the evidence the subcommittee has seen, further investigation into them is probably justified.
Mike, do you want to add anything while we're talking about this one before we go to the vote?
The report is the report. I think the subcommittee members that were part of the group have led on the production of the report. That's the contents of the report and the recommendations they want to put to scrutiny committee to vote.
Thank you. So we are going to vote on this one. This is the waste and recycling issue. So what I will ask is we'll take a vote. So those in favour of taking the report further, please show your hands. Against? And abstentions. Okay, no abstentions. Thank you. So we will take that report to cabinet. Thank you. So we'll move on to the next report. I'll ask Dan if you can bring this one. Thank you.
Chair. From previous updates, to know that the subgroup has spoken to support Staffordshire and BACT to see how the third sector responded to the pandemic and how local communities has been supported. Support Staffordshire obviously provide support to the voluntary sector, so the subgroup felt it was vital to understand how they responded during those early stages of the pandemic. So it's actually developed, in the interview with us, they discussed that they developed a close working relationship with the council, and the themes that they focused on in the early days was food poverty, prescription delivery, and tackling loneliness, isolation, and mental well-being. They also quite early on developed their website. They wanted to provide a central point where organisations could access that information to provide for their volunteers and for the residents. By early April, they had set up a safety net for residents in need or for those residents who hadn't accessed any local support. So what this meant is that anyone who called the county emergency hotline could pass through to a locality or district for ongoing support once the county council met the immediate emergency need. As members may be aware, the lead in East Staffordshire was burned out with the Community Trust. So 3.6 of the report, there are some key statistics which members might be interested to see on support Staffordshire between April and June 2020. I'm sure everyone can remember the news and the sort of discussions at the time about how there was this momentum in volunteering, certainly in the early months of the pandemic, and Sports Aperture, both Sports Aperture and BAT supported that. They had that real momentum of volunteering. I've revisited, after the question, the subgroup spoke to both BAT and Sports Aperture, and they said, well, there has been what they call volunteer fatigue in recent years. There's still plenty of people who want to volunteer, there's plenty of people that want to help, and there's also plenty of community organisations that offer support. Sports Aperture, it's worth mentioning as well, did say that one of the challenges organisations face when trying to source funding in the current climate is that much of it at the moment, especially, is very focused. So, which is putting the bail for those organisations, it's really only available if they've got a COVID-specific need. So, we'll see later on that's something that the subgroup recognises and that's form part of the recommendations. Since the BAT, as I mentioned before, BAT are the Voluntary Community Social Enterprise League for East Aperture. It was a good discussion with BAT, and it became clear that they made a conscious decision to embed themselves within the community. You might be aware the football clubs have been used for many purposes, and at the time were mainly used for a COVID-19 testing centre, and pop-up testing facility, a vaccination centre, and also it's been used to provide midwives to provide pre- and postnatal checks to ensure that continuity in that area. Medical support. BAT provided emergency fast support for those in the community who are in need, and that allowed local people to connect to one another. And in addition to that emergency fast support, they have community parcels, which were sent to people who in isolation. They include things like crosswords and puzzles, and it was really with the focus and the aim of trying to help people keep mentally active. Or what those people who are isolating were potentially more vulnerable. So in response, BAT have developed a central contact database and a formalised referral path to partner organisations that will ensure that people are directed to the right organisation and depending on their needs. And moving forward, BAT will continue to network with local organisations and focus on the local community. So whilst activity is spread across the South Australia, their focus in key areas. So the report summarises that there's still appetite to volunteer in East Aperture, and both Staffordshire Sports Aperture and BAT discussed future plans for an interview by the subgroup. Therefore, the subgroup have recommended that a member briefing is arranged for both Sports Aperture and BAT to depend on how councillors can support and organise and support both organisations and get involved. In addition, it's clear that there's a host of community groups and volunteering opportunities in the voluntary sector across the borough. Therefore, committee felt a regular volunteer forum where members and voluntary groups can meet to discuss volunteering opportunities would be welcome. The group felt that members could further become the conduit between the council, volunteer groups and residents. As I mentioned previously, support staff have highlighted that the difficulty of some organisations face when trying to source funding. So another recommendation would be to review ESVC's voluntary grant and supporter schemes to ensure that funding and support is flexible and to support the local context and need. And finally, the group felt it would be beneficial to members, community groups and the PEP public in general to improve how we sort of signpost people to those volunteer opportunities and those organisations. So the recommendations are listed in section 6 of the report. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Dan. Has anyone got any questions on this report? Councillor Hussain.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick observation for Norwich, actually. My local community centre, during the COVID itself, there is more than 10,000 cooked meal, or there is no reference of this at all in the report as well. For the reference of note or something for the future, you can make one. Some of them grants come from other organizations, from the county council of Australia. I know there are so many VCSC's work also related to Staffordshire County Council. So, and there are so many small organizations. Are also, they dedicated their time
to the community involvement, which is also not visible in this report. I know it is not an intentional or anything. They have somehow slipped through from the report. I think it is our duty as a councillor to recognise their good effort, what they have done for our community. Thank you.
Councillor Gregman.
Thanks. I think voluntary sector, the way voluntary sector work moving forward is going to be a huge topic. I know there are some changes in South Derbyshire coming forward. South Derbyshire CVS, obviously we're talking about East South Derbyshire CVS are going to expand their services and expand their offering and grow the voluntary sector support that they give in South Derbyshire moving forward. That may impact on the voluntary sector in East Staffordshire as well. I know that South Derbyshire may be looking to encompass these staff services within some of the service offering that they're doing. But residents will be looking, I think, more broadly to voluntary sector organisations and voluntary sector support moving forward as we come out and through the pandemic. There is going to be a local government restructure. There will be some changes to the services offered at local authority level. Residents won't matter about that then. They'll be reaching out to people to give them support, and they'll be reaching out to the voluntary sector to give them support. They'll get that support off the voluntary sector. There's going to be a huge demand on voluntary sector services. I think there's a risk for East Staffordshire CVS, I do. And it'd be interesting to get them into a meeting to talk to them about their future plans, their future growth plans, where they see any risks, and how they interact with public sector organisations to help provide services to the residents moving forward, because there will be some changes. There will be some changes to that, there will be some changes to us. And as I've stated previously, East Ash CBS is a little bit of a threat, I think.
Councillor Walker, please, because you have spoken.
Let's try. Let me start with the first two points that I accept in the recommendations, 6.1 and 6.5. I think it is imperative that we do review voluntary grant schemes, and I do think we should all amend this briefly to have a better understanding exactly what supports that issue and back do. Because there's a lot of things in this report, certainly from the first wave of COVID, I don't recognise with certainly that. It talks about pop-up centres for the wider community. What does that mean? Vaccination centres. The reality was the other vaccination centres that burned out in football. I've still got the emails which I sent to the county council at the time when they were leading all these things, asking what were you going to do for the main communities, the ones that are very private, that operate, you know, amongst people who we know, who we trust. They will not travel. And it's interesting, Councillor Atkins says, in some of these areas, we've had a low vaccine take-up. We asked for testing centres to be brought into the community, not to Shovel, but to Anglesey. And admittedly, Anglesey had some success down at Oxford Street. But Eden Park and Shovel had very limited success. And what did we find when we was highlighting these problems? That people's first language weren't English. They were especially the females of the communities, the women, the ladies, sorry, political threat. Term I get in short sometimes we call it ladies using that phrase. But this feels safer around people that you know, people who they're familiar with. We lost one of our own from East Staffordshire Council in the second wave of the abusive in the communities. He himself, I know for a fact, was unvaccinated. But we lost him. He lost two young children. That I never saw them in these sort of areas. It's a shame Castle Lake wasn't it. We was alerted. And during the first wave, we was doing a lot of food drops. We was alerted to a family up in Staple. And Castle Lake messaged me saying, can you I've seen you guys on social media. Can you provide this family with some food? Because they contacted back, and her words, not mine, they made her jump through hoops and she put the phone down. And people don't need to be asked questions when they're starving. They just need food. I mean, Councillor Hussain is absolutely correct. I attended some of the food parcel sessions during Ramadan down at Oxford Street Mosque. And during that week, they were delivering 2,000 food parcels to families across in a Burton. It didn't matter whether they were from the community. They were Christian, Indian, Muslim. They were delivering food parcels to people here. Myself and Councillor Hussain, just over the road here, we was alerted to a widow of three children. She was isolated, lonely. I think she was she lacking a rain?
Syria, sorry.
But we delivered food to her. Because these people, I said, the point is, we did not see these groups in these communities. We didn't see them. Is that right? But that's why I accept it, because of those two points for the members' briefing, to understand what are they going to do, how they're going to put this right going forward, and certainly to review how the money's allocated, because there is, as Councillor Hussain has mentioned, there is a lot of good organisations out there that went under the radar, that was funded. I know there's Humanity United that were funded specifically by trade unions, certainly by Unite. They got a lot of funding from there. And they went under the radar and went unnoticed. And to say, these two that we champion, they don't know they're there because they don't look for them.
Can I just like to say as well, I think the Burton Caribbean Centre, I think they were also supposed to...
Apologies, yes. And they still are every Saturday.
Indeed.
Yes.
Councillor, you say that I'll come to you, and then Councillor Ackwood. Okay. Okay, Councillor.
Okay. Okay, toxicity. I've come over a little bit. You toxicity form because we seem to be ahead of the game in a lot of stuff. Dr. David Atherton, who's a brilliant GP over in toxicity, has recognised that as things progress in the country and in the world, the pressure on NHS is going to get worse and worse and worse. So what he thought was, why don't we start working as a community to try and stop some of the things happening before we have to deal with them? So, you know, why, what illnesses are people getting? What can we give them support? Can we give them? So what we've been doing, we're having a series of meetings in Utopia. Councillor Atkins has been there with us. And we're getting all the local people together, all the groups together who do work in our community. And we're trying to get a directory together so that we're all there and people know what that particular group can help with, where to get hold of them. It's very much in its infancy now, but we started to meet every two or three months. We've got another meeting coming up where we're looking at what can we do in our community, the Utoxeter and surrounding villages and areas, to help people. So we can prevent people having the illnesses and issues that they have before they even get there, because we've recognised that in a few years' time, when our GPs retire, it's going to be hell on earth to try and get people to replace them. So we're trying to put things in place first to try and help prevent a lot of these things happening. And as I said, we get groups from all over the area coming, meeting, and it's getting bigger. And we've got to start making a bit more formal now, we feel, and get a little bit more sort of meat on the bone. But it's started happening in Toxeter. I think there's a meeting coming up fairly soon, isn't it? A couple of weeks on. But we've got the Deputy Lieutenant involved, all sorts of people. Want to put me off. I forget what it's called, it's Smarty Toxeter First or something like that. But it's about getting all the community together. Remember what it's called, George?
Thank you,
Councillor. But it's happening, it's, you know.
Thank you for that. Councillor Hussain, you're the last one on this one, then we're going to take a vote on this one. Well, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for giving me the floor again. Just very quickly, on the report, what I wanted to see and what I want your attention is, there was actually a big problem, especially when the social media leaked and all these misinformation and everything. That was one of the biggest hurdles for us to give the, get the, you know, vaccinations as well. And also, Chair, for every councillor's attention, may I humbly ask you to look into it. During the pandemic, there is one cohort of people, because of their immigration status and the passport that shown, they had no recourse from public fund. As a result, Chair, they didn't have any single dime, any support from the central government or local government or anything. Those people suffered a lot, and Councillor Walker can recall, we got the trolley, we took the rice bag and everything, we went to those people as well. They have the hardest rich populations. I would urge the controlling group or whoever in control or whoever has any opportunity, please look after those people, those children as well. They're also, they're the ultimate victim. They didn't have sort of support. I'm proud to represent them, and whatever recourse I have, I try to get them to pursue this one. And also, Chair, in a recovery stage, I would urge to look into those orphans. Councillor Walker mentioned our one, left two children, mm-hmm. and there's so many. If you come to Angus, even in Shelburne, you can get so many stories like that as well. Young children, they lost their moms, they lost their parents as well. Mm-hmm. And we need some specific program how we can reinforce them as well, how we can give them a better life as well. Always, it's true, Chair, father is always a role model. Unfortunately, they are not in there. There is statements.
I'll give what you're saying.
This is very moving subject, Chair. There is a lot to do, and now the actual work begins. We have to rebuild ourselves, and I'm so proud to say those volunteers, that angels of their wings, they're very best to keep us going, and we need to look after them, how we should support them. I'm so disappointed to see ours. We used to have a very functioning CCF grants of £1,000. Unfortunately, this is what you mean. I'm just trying to wrap it up, Chair. Yeah. Because these are the issues we need to tackle it sooner rather than later. I'm really grateful for your indulgence.
At the end of the day, it's a very important subject you're saying. So, Dan, I will just ask you, do you want to add anything to that? If not, we're going to vote on this report. Okay. So we're going to take a vote then on this supporting and engaging communities. Mm-hmm. So those four. Accepting the report. Raise your hands, please. You'll have to go through the normal procedure. Those against. Abstentions. Okay. Thank you. Can I just say, councillors, I'm very impressed with the report. You're putting both reports, so yeah, well done.
Yeah, I mean, this was a nice meeting, a good meeting as well. Yeah, your skill is also...
You don't need to say that. All right, we'll move to number 9 on the agenda. So it's the health scrutiny works programmes. So I'm going to go to Councillor Clark at the impact on the health on GPs.
Thank you, Chair. So myself, Councillor Walker and Councillor Walker met the other week to discuss the scoping paper. I think it was quite a useful session in terms of what we're going to look at and what was coming out of scope. We'll hopefully be sharing that with the committee as soon as we've got that finalised. I think the input from tonight's meeting was quite useful. Quite a lot of avenues to go down in terms of data collection.
all in all, I think positive progress so far. I know Councillor Walker is anything to add.
Okay. And the impact on COVID on the
Thank you, Chair. The team consists of myself, Councillor Beach, Councillor Louise Walker, and Councillor Montreux. Again, we had a very positive first meeting on the 17th of January, and my co-host helped us with that meeting. We tried to find three definitive questions to put towards the scoping paper, but I think we started to elaborate on 3 to 6, and it just kept going. So I think it's a subject that we could have talked about for a long time. Mike's got a lot of work to do in terms of pulling the scoping paper together, so I look forward to seeing that as do the rest of the team, and then we'll meet again to move from there. Okay. But again, a very positive meeting.
Thank you very much, Councillor McGarry. Okay, so we await with interest your reports, actually. So, item number 10, the public executive decision records. Am I correct in saying we've got 2 of these? So they are to be noted, but if anyone's got any comments on them, I'm sure if you, Councillor Grogan, you've got your last.
Yes, question. No, I was going to actually. I was going to ask a question on 382.21, which is the 5-year land supply position. I wanted to know that figure, what the 5-year land supply was currently.
Councillor Allen, would you like to answer that while you're here? You are here, so.
I don't think that was a question, it was just a question about the possible question. So, happy to answer.
Yeah.
Do attempt an answer.
Yes.
If I'm asked a question.
Otherwise, we can provide Councillor Burnley with a, you know, a written. I apologise, Councillor Allen, but you are here and you're here today.
You want to answer? I don't think I've been asked a question. I've just been asked about a potential question that hasn't been asked. So I'll just.
Councillor Grover, would you like to do that again?
Just repeat. I said it's a pity Naomi's here because I'd like to know about her 5-year land position. She's not here, so could we please tell me what a 5-year land supply position is currently?
If you can, Councillor Allen. If you can't, then 5.
Sorry, no, I'll look at the detail. It's 8.89, I think. I'll check and email you.
Okay, thank you for that. So the next one is 35.321, which is the 5-year land supply. The next one is the infrastructure. Am I correct in that, Andrea? Before I get this wrong. Again, they are noted. So we'll move on to item number 11. Are there any questions?
No, we haven't received any.
Okay, so the next date of the next meeting is 22nd of March, if you note that in your 24th. Did I say 22nd? Well, I won't be
it's a long meeting.
Sorry, I apologise.